blazing in his eyes.
"Tell me,"
he invited softly.
"To prime me a command. This is Senior Captain Thrawn," Thrawn said. "My companion Thalias has delivered a message to your representative, a copy of which is reproduced below. If it's the same message as you've already received, then all is well, and you may consider my offer at your leisure. However, if you did not, in fact, receive this same message from my companion's hand, we may conclude that some of your officers and troops have conspired with General Yiv to withhold my message from you. If that is the case, I urge you to consider my offer with all necessary speed. To aid in your decision, I also include data from other systems that have had dealings with the Nicardune, as well as information about a ship full of refugees he murdered. I or my representatives will journey to Primea in the near future to discuss the matter with you." Thrawn stopped, and for a long moment, Yiv just gazed at him in silence.
"Absurdity,"
he said at last.
"The Vax won't move this quickly. They can't. They consider all thought lines. All thought lines."
Thrawn shook his head.
"No. What they consider..."
"Curse!"
Yiv cut him off, his gaze snapping back and forth to unseen displays around him.
"No, they can't be. The Vax!"
He snarled something else, and suddenly the image blanked.
"What's going on?"
Killori asked, his cheek winglets quivering. 3 minutes ago, the Benevolent had had everything completely under control. What in the depths was happening out there?
"I assume Admiral Aralani has finished her negotiations," Thrawn said, his voice glacially calm. "And that the Vax have given permission for her to fire on the Nicardune blockade ships."
"The blockade ships? But..."
Killori strangled off the reflexive protest. Of course, a mere Pathfinder hireling wouldn't know that Yiv's current plans for Primea didn't include a blockade.
There's a blockade?"
"Presumably merely to prevent anyone from blundering into our conversation," Thrawn said a little too dryly. "But of course the Vax don't know that. They see only that by imposing his will on Primea's commerce, Yiv has denied them important thought lines."
He turned to Killori, an odd and discomforting intensity in those glowing red eyes.
"Tell me, Pathfinder, do you think Yiv will meekly stand by and watch his Primea fleet be destroyed?"
"I don't know,"
Killori said helplessly. What was he supposed to say?
"I suppose it depends on whether he can afford to lose the ships."
"You offer the wrong question," Thrawn said. "Of course he can afford to lose the ships. The true question is whether he can allow the Vax to see him bow to Chiss will and cower before Chiss might."
"Surely all the ships at Primea are smaller vessels,"
Killori said.
"It's no disgrace to lose small warships to large ones."
"It is if there are larger ships available, and their commander refuses to risk them."
"Maybe the Vax don't know he has bigger ships."
"Of course they do," Thrawn chided. "He just said that they did."
Killori silently cursed at himself. It had been a stupid, stupid thing to say.
I just meant..."
"But these are just worksheet details," Thrawn interrupted. "The answer is no. He can't afford for Primea to see his weakness." He nodded toward the viewport. "As you see."
"As I see?"
Killori repeated, following Thrawn's gaze. The four Nicardune battle dreadnoughts arrayed against them had become just one. The Deathless was still there, its awesome weaponry still turned toward Thrawn's freighter, but the other three battle dreadnoughts were gone.
That should make the battle a bit more of a challenge, Thrawn commented, touching the comm switch. Provided Admiral Arulani hasn't made too much of a mess of the Nikkar Dune blockade ships. General, are you still there?
I am here, Thrawn.
Abruptly, the display lit up again with Yiv's face. Only this wasn't the cheerful, persuasive, charming friend of all people's face the Benevolent liked to show his would-be conquests. It wasn't even the quietly menacing face that Killori had seen on far too many occasions, a face that never failed to send palpitations through his cheek winglets, even when the threat wasn't directed at him. This face was something new. This face was pure hatred.
Your people will die for this,
the Nikkar Dune ground out.
Not just you, not just your pitiable fleet, or the Chiss. The Ascendancy will die, shredded like grain, ground down like stone, burned like withered grass. Every last cup will die. And you will die here and now, with a certain knowledge that you and you alone were the root and cause of their destruction.
All because I cost you your foothold on Brymeer? Thrawn asked, his voice and face as calm as Yiv's were malevolent. Come now, General. You merely need to step away and start over.
His face hardened.
But I suggest you choose a different part of the chaos for your next attempt. This region will no longer accept your smiles and promises.
How little you know, Chiss.
Then enlighten me, Thrawn invited. Tell me who you serve, or who follows in your wake.
If there's more to know than just the Nikkar Dune, I'm more than willing to listen. Yiv's mouth opened in a smile that was just as bitterly angry as his glare had been.
Then you'll forever wonder as I send you to your grave.
Deliberately, he looked down at the two females kneeling in front of him.
But before you leave this life, I'll show you exactly what I have planned for your entire species.
The Springhawk had just sent its third Nikkar Dune patrol boat into shredded oblivion when the three battle dreadnoughts suddenly flashed into view.
And the bruisers have arrived, Carol announced calmly. Nice micro jump, or whatever they did.
Looked like an in-system jump, as Morty said from the helm.
Shorter and easier than even a micro.
Also doesn't have enough back trail to show where it came from. Dalvu added grimly. If they came from Yiv, we still don't know where he is.
Which meant they couldn't go to Thrawn's aid if he needed them, Simakro knew. Thrawn's life was in his own hands now. If he'd miscalculated any aspect of the plan, if he stumbled on any of the steps, he would likely die out there. So would a lot of Chiss. And the Springhawk would be in need of a new captain.
Stop it! Simakro ordered himself.
Thrawn was his commander, the rightful master of this ship, and Simakro's job was to do his duty to Arulani and the Ascendancy and to return the Springhawk to its master in the best shape he could, which was suddenly a more challenging proposition than it had been 30 seconds ago.
Orders, Admiral, he called.
We split them up,
Arulani said.
Greyshike, Whisperbird, Stingfly, take one to starboard. I'll take the one to port side. Springhawk, you move on the middle one. Don't fully engage. Just keep it occupied. Everyone else, watch your backs and continue your attrition of the patrol craft.
Acknowledged, Simakro said.
So the Springhawk, all alone against a battle dreadnought? terrific.
At least she's not expecting us to destroy it outright,
Carol said dryly.
I don't suppose you have any idea how we keep something that size occupied.
Simacro smiled. As a matter of fact, he said, I do.
Chapter 22.
But before you leave this life,
Yiv had said in a voice that had sent a fresh shiver down Chiri's skin,
I'll show you exactly what I have planned for your entire species.
He was talking about her, she knew. Her and Thalias. Thrawn had promised that no harm would come to either of them, and Chiri had held on to that hope through this whole thing. But now, doubt was beginning to chew away at the edges of that hope. Thrawn still sounded confident, but he was out there, all alone, and Chiri and Thalias were in here, surrounded by Nicardoon. And yet, somehow it felt like Thrawn was still in control. Admiral Arulani and a fleet of Chiss warships were at the planet, and they'd done something that had made Yiv so angry or frightened that he'd sent his other three big ships over there to stop them. That had to be part of the plan, didn't it? She stole a sideways look up at Yiv, wincing. She'd been wrong. He wasn't frightened, not at all. He was just angry. Angry, hate-filled, and confident. The other Nicardoon on the bridge were talking together in a language Chiri didn't understand. Carefully trying not to attract Yiv's attention, she leaned a little closer to Thalias.
Do you know what they're saying?
She whispered. Thalias shook her head. It's their own language, she whispered back. It's only when they talk to us or Thrawn that they use Manisiat, or... Abruptly, someone gave a wordless scream. Chiri flinched back, her heart seizing up. The scream had come from behind her, from Yiv himself. He'd heard her talking to Thalias, and now he was going to hurt her. Another wordless scream, and out of the corner of her eye, she saw his hand jab out over her head at one of the other Nicardoon. The other gave a nervous-sounding answer and touched a switch on his control board.
Nicardoon Battle Dreadnought, this is the Chiss Expansionary Defense Fleet Warship Springhawk.
A calm Chiss voice came over the speaker in Manisiat. Chiri frowned. Was that Mid-Captain Simacro? Why was he talking to one of the Nicardoon ships?
I feel you should know that we are Senior Captain Thrawn's personal ship,
Simacro continued.
As such, it's only sporting for me to offer you the chance to surrender before we destroy you.
Yiv gave out another scream and again jabbed a finger. The same Nicardoon gave a jerky nod and hastily shut off the transmission. Jerky? Hasty? Like he was scared. Carefully, she looked back at Thalias. The older woman was keeping perfectly still, but there was a tiny smile playing at the corner of her mouth. Chiri frowned. And then she got it. The Nicardoon on the Deathless's bridge were scared, all right. But they weren't scared of Thrawn. They were scared of their own leader. Whatever Simacro had been trying to do with that transmission, he'd made Yiv even more furious than he'd been before. Which might not be a good thing, Chiri realized with a fresh shiver. The stories about Thrawn talked about times when he deliberately made an enemy angry in order to keep him from thinking straight. But in this case, Yiv had her and Thalias as hostages, and he'd already threatened to hurt them. Making him angry might just make him hurt them sooner.
That's good advice, General,
Thrawn's voice said over the speaker.
Be advised that if you continue along your current path, I'm fully prepared to destroy you.
Your freighter against a battle dreadnought?
Yiv said contemptuously.
Your foolishness is matched only by your arrogance. Both will light your way to destruction. Whatever you do now, you die. You and all the Chiss will die.
Then make an end of it,
Thrawn invited.
Come and take me.
Ciri could feel her breath coming in quick, shallow gulps. Again, she could sense that this was all part of Thrawn's plan. Again, she had no idea what it might be. But again, Thalias was smiling. Again, Kilori hadn't the slightest idea what Thrawn was doing. But the small smile on the Chiss's face chilled him straight to the bone. He was up to something, sitting out here, making no move to either advance or retreat, inviting Yiv to come and get him. But there wasn't any possible end to this gambit except Thrawn's utter destruction. And then, suddenly, he got it. Yiv was focused on Thrawn, completely and obsessively on Thrawn. Nothing would distract him from that focus, which left the Deathless completely open to an attack from the rear. Kilori felt his winglets quivering. He'd never anticipated he might need to communicate surreptitiously with the Benevolent on this trip, and so had never set up a tap into the freighter's comm system. How could he warn him that Thrawn was goading him from here to keep him from anticipating the attack that would come from a completely unexpected direction?
Pathfinder Kilori.
Kilori jerked.
Yes?
You seem upset, Thrawn said. You're possibly thinking I have another force prepared, waiting for the proper time to launch its attack.
Kilori's winglets flattened. How in the depths did he do that?
I have no idea, one way or the other,
he said diplomatically. But you know how it could be done, don't you?
Thrawn persisted.
Even given the altered coordinates that you substituted for the ones in Yiv's original message.
I don't...
He broke off as Thrawn turned those glowing red eyes on him.
It's not my concern.
Come now, Pathfinder. Don't be so modest, Thrawn said. You and I understand, even if many of Yiv's victims don't. For a long time, he's been using the Pathfinder's ability to locate each other through hyperspace, to coordinate his attacks.
No, of course not!
Kilori protested reflexively.
Direct cooperation with a military force would be a blatant violation of Navigator's Guild rules!
And would likely lead the Guild to eject the Pathfinders from its organization.
Kilori swallowed hard.
It could happen,
he admitted.
Not just could, Thrawn said. You'd prefer, then, that I keep that knowledge to myself?
Kilori glared at him.
Of course,
he ground out.
What's your price?
Thrawn turned back to the viewport.
The price, he said, is for you to forget everything you see from this point on.
Fine,
Kilori said. It was a simple enough promise, he told himself. Yiv would probably also want him to forget today's events, and he had a long history of obeying the Benevolence orders.
And as to your earlier fear, Thrawn continued, there's no need for me to launch any attack. The battle for the Vac Combine is taking place over Primea, and has left Yiv with only two options. One, he can stay here and attempt to destroy me thus giving the impression that he's hiding from the battle. Two, he can leave to bolster his forces, and thus appear that he's running from me. He gestured toward the Deathless. Even now, he attempts to decide which of those scenarios will damage his reputation less.
It will be interesting to see which way he goes,
Kilori muttered. And really, there would be no question of Thrawn keeping that potentially devastating knowledge about the Pathfinders to himself. Not once he was dead. Another barrage of Spectrum laser fire blasted across the Springhawk's hull, knocking out three more sections of the electrostatic barrier and gouging a couple of fresh grooves in the metal. At least, Simacro thought distantly as he shouted orders. Arlani couldn't claim he hadn't obeyed his orders. The Springhawk was keeping the battle dreadnought busy, all right.
Watch it, Springhawk! You've got two gunboats angling in from ventral port side!
One of the other Chiss ships snapped in warning.
On it!
Carol said. And there was a double thud as a pair of plasma spheres blasted off toward the attacking gunboats.
Keep us rolling, Simacro said, looking at the tactical. The two Nicardoon were trying to veer out of the paths of the plasma spheres, but it was too late. Both gunboats flared as the spheres hit them, spraying hot, ionized gas across their sensors and external control lines, and sending high-voltage spikes into the deeper parts beneath the hull metal. There were multiple flickers as power systems overloaded or got shunted, and a second later, both Nicardoon were coasting along, temporarily dead.
Asmordi, swing us around, he ordered the helm. Get us behind them! Use them as shields.
For whatever that'll buy us,
Carol warned quietly.
Simacro grimaced. It wouldn't buy them much, unfortunately. He tried dodging, running, feinting, and straight up toe-to-toe slugging.
And while he was wearing down the Nicardoon dreadnought, the Springhawk was wearing down even faster. Even frequent sniping sorties by some of the other Chiss hadn't been enough to deflect the Nicardoon captain from his single-minded pursuit. Yiv didn't just want Thrawn dead. He apparently wanted everything even associated with him to also be destroyed. Two more salvos skated across the Springhawk's hull before Asmordi got them into the protected zone behind the two disabled gunboats.
Okay, we've got a little breathing space,
Carol said.
Any thoughts as to what to do with it?
Simacro considered. They were still a good distance from the battle dreadnought, which was why they hadn't been completely destroyed yet. But the vector they were currently on was taking them closer to their attacker than they'd been so far. That wouldn't be a particularly good thing once their Nicardoon traveling companions got their systems back online. But for the moment, he glanced at the tactical, did a quick distance calculation. Marginal, but it might just work.
How many breachers do we have left?
He asked, looking past the edge of the disabled ships at the dreadnought and its mockingly big bridge viewport.
Three,
Carol said.
Prep them,
Simacro ordered.
We'll give it a few more seconds. Get as close as we dare, then blast all three straight at the dreadnought's viewport.
Yes, sir,
Carol said, a little uncertainly.
You do realize we've already tried that, right?
From considerably farther away,
Simacro reminded him.
If we get close enough, the dreadnought can blast them whenever it wants to, and the acid still won't have time to dissipate before it reaches the viewport.
Worth a try,
Carol agreed.
Okay, breachers prepped. Call it.
Simacro counted out the seconds to himself, trying to gauge the right time to fire. Too soon, and they'd be wasting their last breachers in a useless attempt. Too late, and they would risk the two gunboats beside them waking up and adding their own bit of catastrophe into the Springhawk's current mix.
stand by to fire. 3, 2, 1.
With a soft triple jolt, the 3 Breacher missiles blasted away, skimming past the gunboats on their way to the battle dreadnought. They barely cleared the gunboats' hulls when 6 Spectrum lasers lashed out from the dreadnought, catching the Breachers and blowing them to shreds. Sooner than Simacro had hoped. But with Breachers, destruction of the missiles themselves wasn't the last word. The released masses of acid were still in motion, the tendrils still twisting and spinning as their initial momentum continued to carry them toward their target. Unless the dreadnought could get out of the way, and the acid was already too close for that, it was going to get hit. Simacro held his breath. And then, almost at the last moment, one of the Nicardoon patrol craft shot in from the side, braking hard to put itself directly in the path of the 3 incoming acid globs. "It's not big enough," Carol muttered hopefully.
"We can't block all 3 of them."
The words barely out of his mouth when the dreadnought again opened fire. Only this time, the target was the Nicardoon patrol craft in front of it. Even as Simacro felt his mouth drop open in disbelief, the ship exploded, scattering debris in all directions. And the debris cloud, unfortunately, was big enough to block all 3 acid globs.
"Curse it!"
Carol bit out.
"These guys are crazy!"
"Springhawk, what's your status?"
Arulani's voice came over the speaker.
"We're still here, Admiral," Simacro said. "But we wouldn't turn down any timely aid you wanted to offer."
"Timely aid it is,"
Arulani said grimly.
"I was hoping we wouldn't have to go over this, but so be it. Do you remember the maneuver Thrawn used against the Potatis when he first took command of the Springhawk?"
Simacro looked up at Carol, found the others staring back with a sour expression. They both remembered, all right.
"Yes, ma'am," Simacro said. "When?"
"Hold behind the gunboats you flickered another few seconds. Then come out and angle toward low orbit. I'll tell you when to go dark."
"Acknowledged," Simacro said,
wondering what this was supposed to accomplish. The battle dreadnought had already shown it was willing to go anywhere and through anyone, including its own people, in order to keep pressure on the Springhawk.
"Asmordi, get ready. Go!"
The wrenching twist, the Springhawk pitched away from the gunboats and blasted across the battlefield toward the planet below.
"Stand by to go dark." He counted out 3 seconds.
"Go!"
Arulani ordered.
"Acknowledged," Simacro said.
Across the bridge, his officers shut off their systems, their boards going dark, dim emergency lighting coming on. And with that, the Springhawk had become nearly as helpless as it was possible for a warship to be. Though for the moment, at least, their imminent destruction would be postponed a bit. The firing lines from the battle dreadnought were currently blocked by a running battle between 2 of the Chiss missile boats and a Nicardoon destroyer. Another few seconds, though, and the Springhawk's vector would take it into the clear.
"Captain?"
Carol prompted.
"I don't know," Simacro said. "Let's see what the Admiral has in mind."
They didn't have long to wait.
"VAC patrol boat. We have a ship with critical life support failure,"
Arulani called.
"None of our ships are close enough to offer assistance. Can one of your ships render aid?"
"Chiss warship, we are not combatants,"
a VAC voice came back.
"We cannot interfere in your war."
Simacro felt his lip twist. "Your war? The Chiss were trying to defend the VAC homeworld, for hell's sake. How was that your war?"
"I know, and I accept that,"
Arulani said,
apparently not wanting to get into the politics of the situation.
But under the circumstances, surely you can offer humanitarian aid.
We will,
the Vax said reluctantly.
Nikardun warships. Two patrol ships are moving to render humanitarian aid. Do not fire upon them. Repeat, do not fire upon them.
I confirm that, Nikardun Commander,
Arulani added.
The Vax ships are not entering combat, but only rendering humanitarian aid. Do not, repeat, do not fire on them.
Ahead, just off the Springhawk's starboard bow, two Vax patrol ships were on the move, heading toward the supposedly crippled ship.
So do we continue to play dead?
Carol asked.
Somehow, I can't see the Nikardun standing off and courteously letting us recover before trying to stomp us again.
I assume Arulani's got a plan.
An instant later, the sky lit up as one of the two Vax ships disintegrated in a blaze of Nikardun laser fire.
Nikardun!
Arulani snapped again.
Do not attack! Do not attack!
She might as well have saved her breath. There was a second laser barrage, and the other patrol ship was gone as well.
Nikardun! Those were not combatants!
Arulani ground out.
Maybe they weren't before,
Carol said, an odd tone to his voice.
But I do believe they are now.
Simakro frowned. He was right. All around them, the Vax patrol ships that had been studiously staying away from the combat zone were suddenly on the move. In groups of three and four, they were converging on the battle dreadnought, their missiles blazing toward the huge ship, their lasers flashing against its electrostatic barriers and digging into its hull.
Lesson for today, Carol continued. Don't get so focused on one enemy that you end up making another one. Ready to come back to life?
Let's not, Simakro said. Arulani said we were teetering on the edge of disaster. It wouldn't look very good if we suddenly showed we weren't.
Yes. I doubt the Vax would be happy to know they were betrayed by one side and manipulated by the other,
Carol agreed.
Then
we sit back, Simakro said. Try to avoid any obvious attacks and watch the show.
What is his plan?
Yiv shouted, leaning over to slap Thalias across the back of her head.
What is his plan?
I don't know, Thalias said.
He brings in cheese warships to attack me?
Yiv snarled as if she hadn't spoken.
He goads the Vax into conspiring with them against me? What is his purpose? What is his goal?
He reached down and dug his fingers into her hair, twisting her head around to face him.
What is his plan?
I don't...
Thalias winced back as his hand slapped her face, managing to turn just far enough to take the blow on her ear instead of her cheek. The concussion sent a spear of pain and dizziness through her whole head.
There's no need for that, General,
Thrawn's calm voice said over the bridge speaker.
My plan is to put you in a box, and so you are.
I can destroy you whenever I choose,
Yiv bit out.
Once you've moved within weapons range, a position I'll note you don't seem that eager to achieve.
Would you like to see your death coming more quickly?
Yiv retorted.
Helm, increase speed!
I thought you wanted to bring me aboard the Deathless, so that you could kill me yourself.
You invited me yourself to come get you,
Yiv said.
Make up your mind!
It doesn't matter. It's already too late.
You've spent too long here for the Vax and your own people. Not to conclude, you don't wish to join the battle over Primea. Leaving now will be interpreted as an attempt to escape from me. Either way, your reputation is permanently damaged.
Only if there are any witnesses left to tell a tale other than my own,
Yiv said.
Interestingly enough, I've had the same thought. You have only one move left. Only one way to salvage your name and position. You'll come within tractor beam range and bring my ship aboard. I'll disembark. You'll transfer my companions aboard, and they'll leave in peace.
Yiv gave a contemptuous snort.
Ha! A long way to go, Cheese, just to take me where I planned to go in the first place. As I think about it, perhaps it would be just as satisfying to destroy you where you sit.
And what of my companions?
I told you I'd use them to show what I intended for the entire Cheese species,
Yiv said.
You're right. It would be more impressive if you were aboard to watch their dismemberment instead of watching from your freighter.
Ciri gave a little whimper. It's all right, Thalias thought urgently in her direction. It's all right. Just hold on a little longer.
Very well, General,
Thrawn said calmly.
If you've chosen to face me, so be it. I await your tragedy.
For a moment, Yiv remained silent, testing Thrawn's words for flaws or betrayal, no doubt. But he wouldn't find any, Thalias knew. More important, Thrawn had twisted the situation to where Yiv was angry and frustrated, and where revenge was the most important thing on his mind. The chance to bring Thrawn aboard alive and personally kill him would drive away any other considerations. Yiv barked a command. On the main display, a hazy blue line appeared, connecting the images of the Deathless and Thrawn's freighter. Some numbers shifted, and the freighter began moving forward. And it was time. Thalias looked sideways, catching Ciri's eye. Hostages no more, she murmured, turning back forward, watching the freighter moving toward the Nicardun warship. She reached her hands to her face and dug her fingers beneath the edges of her hostage makeup. For a moment, the thick material resisted. Thalias kept at it, shifting her grip to use her fingernails as claws, noting out of the corner of her eye that Ciri was doing likewise. Abruptly, the hard crust gave way, breaking and shredding into tiny pieces and leaving throbbing wheels on the skin behind. And with a brief rush of cool and moisture, the compressed Tava mist that had been concealed inside the ridges and plateaus blasted into the air. Thalias' first impulse was to hold her breath, but that didn't really do any good. The mist seeped instantly into her nostrils, the initial honey scent quickly changing to something more like burnt sugar as the drug began to play with her senses. As the aroma changed again, this time to that of fresh leather, she could hear the sudden flurry of conversation around her growing slower, the pitch of the alien voices going deeper. The bridge itself began darkening, even as paradoxically, the indicator lights and the stars outside the viewport seemed to grow brighter. And as she could feel her mind fading, it wasn't like the way it felt to fall asleep, with stray thoughts and memories drifting across as she slipped into darkness. This was quicker and more complete, dulling her reason and her self-awareness even as it clouded over her thoughts. And yet, through it all, she was able to hold on to enough to see that it was all working exactly the way Thrawn had said it would. The bridge was big, and the amount of mist the Tex had been able to pack inside the makeup was limited. But even a small amount of the sleepwalking drug was enough to cause confusion and disorientation. And that was all Thrawn needed. As the mist settled around the bridge crew, Thalia saw, both on the displays and through the viewport, that Thrawn's freighter was twisting around, breaking itself free of the tractor beam. A second later, the freighter leapt forward, driving at full acceleration straight toward the Deathless's bridge. The Nicardoon were hardly helpless, of course. Even as Thrawn sped toward them, Yiv gave a slightly slurred order, and the battle dreadnought spectrum lasers blasted outward toward this threat, suddenly bearing down on them. Their aim was tentative, and many of the shots flashed harmlessly into space. However, the Deathless's bridge defenses were strong, and the Nicardoon only slightly impaired, and many of the shots hit straight and true. But a barrage that would have quickly demolished an electrostatic barrier and the unlucky ship behind it simply scattered off the Republic energy shield Thrawn and Ciri had brought back from Okeevja. The freighter came closer, closer, the defensive laser fire intensified, and then, at what seemed like the last second, the mad rush faltered as the freighter slowed slightly. An instant after that, the whole dreadnought shook as the freighter crashed squarely into the oversized viewport, crushing the forward consoles and scattering those members of the crew from its path. Through Thalia's dreamy disorientation, she felt the sudden outflow of air through the shattered viewport, then felt the flow cut off as the customized freighter nose Thrawn had installed settled precisely into the opening, sealing off the bridge from the vacuum beyond. Ciri said something that sounded strangely urgent. Thalius looked over, discovering to her surprise that the girl was half standing up and hanging onto Yiv's right arm, dragging down the weapon he had clutched in that hand. Yiv was trying to pull free, while at the same time cuffing Ciri around the head and shoulders. A moment of thought convinced Thalius that he shouldn't be doing that, and she got her own arms wrapped around the arm he was hitting the girl with. She had a vague sense that there was something else she was supposed to do, but she couldn't remember what it was. And then, suddenly, Thrawn was there, plucking Yiv's gun from his hand and wrapping a breather mask around Thalius' face.
"Are you all right?"
he asked, his voice distorted by his own mask. Thalia said brightly, as Yiv made a sort of half-hearted lunge. Thrawn evaded the attack easily, sending the Nicardoon to land heavily on all fours on the deck. Thrawn gave him a hefty squirt from a Tava canister of his own, setting Yiv's shoulder symbionts into a frenzied wiggle, then turned to Ciri. By the time he'd asked her the same question he'd asked Thalius and had the girl's breather mask in place, Thalius's head was starting to clear.
"Data library,"
Thrawn asked, as he pulled Yiv's arms behind him and fastened the wrists together.
"I think it's that console over there,"
Thalius said, marveling at how quickly and thoroughly her mind had recovered from the gas.
"He also keeps a kind of Questus in a compartment in the left armrest of his chair."
"Excellent,"
Thrawn said.
"You get his Questus. I'll get Yiv aboard the freighter. Then see what I can copy before the rest of the crew breaks through the bridge door."
"We're not going to destroy the ship?"
"I never intended to destroy his ship,"
Thrawn said. Reaching down, he took hold of one of Yiv's arms and levered the unconscious Nicardoon up off the deck.
"All I need to do is destroy him."
"What about them?"
Thalius persisted, pointing to the Nicardoon crew members twitching or muttering on the deck.
Once you pull the freighter out of the viewport, won't they all die?
Thrawn's face hardened. As Yiv has already said, he reminded her quietly. No witnesses.
Memories. 13.
It was, Arulani knew, necessary that she and Thrawn have a talk about what had happened at Solitaire. But she managed to find enough excuses to put it off until they were nearly home. Finally, she couldn't delay it any further.
I should have seen it, Thrawn said,
his eyes fixed on an otherwise unremarkable corner of Arulani's office.
I should have seen the signs.
No, Arulani said. I should have. But not you.
Because you're more experienced?
Because you don't understand politics, Arulani said. Politics, vying for position, feuds, grudges, ledger balancing. They're all things you've never gotten a solid grip on.
But why not? Thrawn asked. I don't disagree. But it's all strategy and tactics. Just a different form of warfare. Why can't I read it?
Because the techniques of warfare are relatively straightforward, Arulani said. You identify the objective, you gather allies and resources, you devise a strategy, and you defeat the enemy. But in politics, allies and goals are constantly shifting. Unless you can anticipate those changes, you can't prepare for them.
Alliances can shift in warfare, too.
But it takes time to move ships and armies around and reconfigure battle lines, Arulani said. You have that time to adapt to the new landscape. In politics, it's all done with words and bits of writing. Half an hour of conversation, less than that if there are bribes involved, and everything has changed.
I see. Thrawn took a long breath. Then I need to study this form of combat. Study it and master it.
That would be helpful, Arulani said.
Only he never would master it, she knew. Just as some were tone-deaf to music, Thrawn was tone-deaf to the nuances and intricate self-serving dances that made up the world of politics. She could only hope that he and his overseers would be astute enough to keep him in the military arena. There, and only there, would he be of genuine and lasting value to the Ascendancy. Thurfian had had to swallow a lot of bitter quaffs during his years of dealing with Ascendancy politics. But this quaff was absolutely the worst of all.
A Trialborn,
he said to the man facing him from the comm display.
After the fiasco with the Leo AOI and Garvians, you're making him a Trialborn?
We have no choice,
Speaker Thistrian said heavily.
The Erisi are making serious overtures to him.
They already tried that, Thurfian said. He turned them down.
Never officially, the speaker said. And that offer was just to make him a Trialborn. Now I understand they're preparing to offer him ranking distance.
Thurfian felt his eyes widen.
A ranking distance? That's absurd!
Maybe so. Maybe not. And even Thrawn isn't blind enough to miss the political advantages that would give him. All we can do is hope that he'd prefer Trialborn of the Myth to ranking distant of the Erisi.
They're bluffing, Thurfian insisted. They're trying to maneuver us into drawing him in and tying him closer to the family. The closer in he is, the bigger the political fallout when he makes his next big mistake.
Maybe he won't.
Won't make a mistake?
Thurfian snorted.
You don't believe that any more than I do. The man's a menace. Give him enough lead time, and he'll burn himself down. And maybe the myth along with him.
Or maybe he'll do something that raises the ascendancy to heights it's never before achieved.
Thurfian stared at him.
You're joking, right? To heights it's never achieved?
It could happen,
the speaker said ruefully.
And if it does, we can't afford to risk that glory shining on the Arisi instead of us.
With all due respect, Speaker, there won't be any glory,
Thurfian said.
Certainly the Council isn't looking at all this with starry eyes. They've already demoted him back to mid-commander.
But they've also given him another ship,
Thistrian said. For the second time in less than a minute, Thurfian felt his eyes widen.
They've what?
A full-rank heavy cruiser this time, too. The Springhawk,
the speaker confirmed.
On top of that, there's talk of also giving him his own combat group. Picket Force 2.
Thurfian stared at the speaker, a chill running through him.
Who's doing this?
He asked, his throat tight.
Someone's burning serious political capital here. Who?
I don't know,
the speaker said heavily.
On the fleet side, best guess is that it's General Barkeef, or possibly Admiral Trafosk. On the myth side,
he shook his head.
It has to be someone close to the Patriarch.
Could it be the Patriarch himself?
I would hesitate to put that name to it,
the speaker said.
But I also wouldn't dismiss that thought out of hand. Certainly Thrawn's life and career have been charmed from the very beginning.
It's still madness, Thurfian said. His failures and embarrassments still outweigh his successes.
I would tend to agree,
the speaker said.
But there's madness, and then there's madness. I looked into Picatoo's current assignment, and it turns out they're working a patrol zone, a fair distance past the Ascendancy's east zenith edge. That would put him far away from the center of Ascendancy politics.
Thurfian ran that over in his mind. Given Thrawn's political ineptness, that wouldn't be the worst assignment they could give him.
It's also on the far side of the Ascendancy from the Leo Aoi and Garwians.
Another plus in my estimation,
the speaker said.
Mostly what's out there are small nations, single system groups, empty space and pirates.
Great,
Thurfian said sourly.
More pirates.
But on that side of the Ascendancy, the only nations large enough to support a pirate group are the Patatis,
the speaker pointed out.
That means less potential for political entanglements if he goes hunting. Besides, he's already demonstrated he can beat the frost out of the Patatis if he needs to, and they know it.
I suppose,
Thurfian said.
The Council could still have sent him out there without giving him a ship.
Perhaps,
the speaker said.
Still, the Springhawk's hardly a major prize. There's no glory to be had there. Just the pressures and responsibilities of command. All things considered, it could have been worse.
Really?
Thurfian countered. Commander of a cruiser and trial-born of the myth? If it could have been worse, he could hardly see how. But it wasn't over. Not nearly. If Thrawn rebuffed the Irisi again, and if Speaker Thistrian was right that that was a pretty foregone conclusion, it would put Aristokra Zistalmu even more solidly on Thurfian's side. Together, they would continue their efforts to derail Thrawn's career before he did something the Ascendancy might never recover from. And while they were only two right now, Thurfian had no doubt that more Aristokra would join them in the days and years ahead. If there was one love they all shared, above and beyond all the family politics and squabbling, it was love of the Ascendancy.
Look at the bright side, Thurfian,
the speaker said into his thoughts.
Whatever Thrawn does next, at least it'll be entertaining to watch.
I'm sure it will, Thurfinn said grimly. I just hope we all live through it.
Chapter 23.
They're not happy with you, you know, Thalias warned, as she set the plate of warmed Yapel triangles in front of Ciri.
It was dinner time, which was supposed to mean a proper balanced meal, but Ciri had wanted Yapels, and Thalias had decided that one meal of junk food wouldn't kill her. Heaven knew the girl had earned some indulgence.
I talked to Admiral Arulani before she went into the hearing. She said some of the Aristocra want to bring charges against you for putting a Skywalker at risk.
I know, Thrawn said. But that sentiment won't go anywhere. As I already told them, I sent you and Ciri to Primea to return the Vac fighter and deliver a message, fully expecting that you would return to Chela on the next available transport. It was Yiv's decision that put you at risk.
Thalias nodded. That was true enough, as far as it went. But at this point, it almost didn't matter. The Aristocra could be as furious as they wanted, but the outpouring of gratitude from the Vax had pulled the momentum from the hope they could mete out any real punishment. That, and the fact that Thrawn had delivered Yiv alive for interrogation. Thalias had no idea what the Council and Aristocra had learned from him and from the data files they'd pulled from the Deathless, but Yiv had struck Thalias as the sort who loved to put his own brilliance on display, even if the only person allowed to see and appreciate that brilliance was himself. She had no doubt that the records of self-indulgence included his precise plans for the Ascendancy.
At least you're getting better at politics, she said. Between the Aristocra and the Vax, you're learning how to play the game.
Thrawn shook his head.
Hardly. Arulani and General Barkeef are handling the dealings with the Aristocra. As to the Vax, that was never strictly about politics.
I still don't understand that part,
Ciri said around a mouthful of food.
Everyone said they want to see all sides of things, but then they just took our side and attacked the Nicar Dune when we asked them to.
Actually, the solution also came from the Admiral, Thrawn said. At the last moment, she saw something that I hadn't.
Thalias sat up a little straighter.
You missed something?
I miss many things, he said. And I did have a part of it, of course. The Vax want to see all the various points of view, all the different thought lines, just as everyone says. But those thought lines aren't given equal weight.
Thalias thought back to the artwork she and Thrawn had seen in the Primea Art Gallery.
But you said their artwork showed the whole thought line thing, she objected.
True, Thrawn said. But if all lines were given equal weight, their art would be a scribble of confusion, with no direction or focus.
So they decide which thought lines they like best?
Ciri asked.
Which ones they like, but more important, which ones they trust. There's really nothing surprising about that. No matter what people might say, they always make value judgments of the information and opinions they receive. They couldn't function otherwise.
I see,
Ciri said, brightening.
When you showed them that Yiv had stolen your message to them, that he lied, he stopped being someone they could trust.
Exactly, Thrawn said. Even worse, from his point of view, as soon as that happened, everything else he'd said became suspect.
So all his promises and negotiations went straight out the vent,
Thalias said.
Correct, Thrawn said.
So what was it Admiral Arulani saw?
Thalias asked.
She'd been looking into Vac history and saw something odd, Thrawn said. For all the contempt their neighbors heaped on them over the years, on the grounds that they can't make a decision, all of those neighbors had been very careful in their confrontations to never kill a Vak in combat. Thalias glanced at Chiri, saw her own surprise reflected in the girl's face.
Really?
Really, Thrawn said. Because they knew the same thing Ar'alani realized. The Vaks value everyone's thought lines. But when someone is killed, their thought lines are gone forever. That robs the whole of the Combine of information and threatens the culture.
So an attack on any individual is an attack on the whole society, Thalias said, nodding.
Exactly, Thrawn said. Whether or not Yiv realized that, the commander of the Battle Dreadnought, who'd been tasked with destroying the Springhawk, apparently didn't care about such subtleties. Ar'alani was able to lure him into firing on a pair of non-combatant Vak ships, killing their crews and awakening that cultural fury. At that point, all the rest of the thought lines suddenly faded away, with only one remaining.
The one where they joined together to protect their world and their people, Thalias murmured.
And with the battle coordination plan I'd already given them, there was no fumbling or false starts. They and Ar'alani's warships quickly and efficiently joined forces against the Nicardoon.
And she got all that just from reading history? Chiri asked.
That and the way she looks at the universe, Thrawn said, with an oddly sad smile. Where I see non-Chiss as assets, she sees them as people.
Thalias looked over at Chiri. A lot of people saw Skywalkers as just assets, too.
Makes her a good commander.
Indeed, it does, Thrawn said. Certainly a better commander than I.
Maybe. Maybe not, Thalias said. Different doesn't necessarily mean better or worse. Different just means different. It was your battle plan, right?
Chiri put in.
She got them on our side, but it was both of you together who won the fight.
Along with the warriors of her attack fleet, Thrawn said. Her officers follow her with confidence, even eagerness. Mine follow me because they're good Chiss warriors.
So change,
Thalias suggested.
Learn how she does it.
I'm not certain I can.
I wasn't sure I could fly,
Chiri said.
You taught me how. And you've been teaching me how to observe and think,
Thalias added.
As to confidence, if you think Chiri and I put our heads into Yiv's trap just because we're good Chiss warriors, you really don't understand people. Or at least not us.
And it may be a long time before either of you are forced into such trust again, Thrawn said. The Ascendancy owes you greatly, Skywalker Chiri. And Thalias, Trialborn of the Myth.
You're Trialborn?
Chiri said, smiling with delight.
Wow! That's great! Thank you,
Thalias said, blinking at Thrawn.
I didn't know they'd announced that yet.
A blazing star hero of the myth,
Thrawn smiled.
Trust me, if they could have announced you as a ranking distant, they would have. But that time will come.
Maybe,
Thalias said.
Sure it will, Chiri said. We're heroes. Captain Thrawn just said so.
You are indeed.
Thrawn stood up.
And now I need to get back to the Blue Dock. The Springhawk's going to need extensive repairs, and I'm told the foreman would like me there in person to hear his report.
Thank you for coming by,
Thalias said.
Chiri and I wanted to hear how it had all ended, but no one had time to talk to us.
You're welcome, Thrawn said. I hope you'll be able to join us aboard the Springhawk again in the near future.
If we have anything to say about it, we will, Thalias promised.
Though that assumed, of course, that she would be allowed to continue as Ciri's caregiver. Right now, that was anything but certain.
Then take care, he said, nodding to each of them. He turned and walked through the hatchway.
Thalias watched him go,
the Patriarch's words echoing through her mind.
And watch over your commander. I cannot help but feel that he holds the key to the Ascendancy's future, whether that future be triumph or ultimate destruction.
Thalias?
Thalias turned back to see Ciri frowning at a Ypel she'd picked up.
Yes?
Ciri eyed the snack another moment, then set it back down on the plate.
I'm finished with these,
she said.
Can I have some real food now?
You certainly may,
Thalias said, smiling.
What exactly would you like?
The trance abruptly ended, and with a start, Kilori found himself wrenched from the Great Presence. He blinked open his eyes. He was still on the bridge of his current ship, nestled into a configured navigator seat. But the lights and displays that should have shown position and status were blank. Somehow the power to the flight and navigation systems had been shut down. And as he pulled off his headset, he saw to his surprise that the bridge was deserted.
Hello?
He called tentatively. No answer.
Hello?
He repeated, staring out the viewport as he fumbled for his straps. The ship was floating dead in space, squarely in the middle of nowhere, with no nearby stars or planets that he could see. What in the depths had happened?
Is anyone there?
Greetings, Kilori of Yuan Duolan.
A cultured voice came from the bridge speaker.
Forgive the interruption in our journey, but I wish to speak to you in private.
Of course,
Kilori managed, his winglets fluttering harder than they had since Thrawn's grand confrontation with the Benevolent 2 months ago.
Yes, I... May I ask your name?
You may not,
the voice said calmly.
Tell me about you, the Benevolent.
Kilori felt his winglets twitch. He'd thought, he'd hoped, all of that was finally past him. Clearly it wasn't.
I don't know what you mean.
He disappeared,
the voice said.
One rumor says he was killed in action. Another says he defected to the Chiss or someone else. Another says he deserted his forces and went to live in quiet luxury in the far reaches of the Chaos. What do you say?
Kilori pressed his winglets against his cheeks, trying to get them to stop moving. Thrawn had warned that any word from him on the subject of Yiv's fate would end with Kilori being thrown out of the Pathfinders and the Pathfinders being thrown out of the Navigators Guild.
I don't...
Do you see where you are?
The voice interrupted.
We're between star systems, light years from anywhere. If you were to step outside now, your body would float forever in the void, with no one ever knowing what became of you. Would you prefer that to answering my question?
No,
Kilori whispered.
Yiv was captured. He was taken by the Chiss, by Senior Captain Thrawn.
And the Nicardoon destiny.
Kilori waved a hand helplessly.
Yiv was the Nicardoon destiny,
he said.
He was the undisputed leader. When he vanished, there was no one else who could take his place. No one who could continue the relationships he'd built with alien governments. The uncertainty over what had happened to him, that all by itself froze everyone's plans and thoughts. And when the Vax started describing to everyone in the region how his ships had fired on them...
He shook his head.
It just all fell apart. Some of his chiefs are still talking about restarting their road of conquest, but no one believes it anymore. Even if they try, they'll just end up fighting among themselves.
And Yiv's map to the road of conquest.
Kilori sighed.
The Chiss got Yiv. They probably got the map and all the rest, too.
For a moment, the voice was silent.
You had a bright future ahead of you. Do you wish that to resume?
I already told you. The Nicar Dune are gone.
There was a small snort.
The Nicar Dune were fools. Heavy-handed, destructive fools. Useful in their way. But we always knew they would break like an ocean wave if they ever encountered too firm a sea stack.
You were the Benevolence Master then?
Kilori asked. An instant later, he regretted his impulsiveness. It was clear he was here to answer questions, not ask them. The deep, cold emptiness of space.
Do you assume, then, that there can be only one military mind that sees the Chiss as the prime obstacle to dominion over the Chaos?
The voice came. To Kilori's relief, there seemed to be more grim amusement than anger in the tone.
No, Kilori of Yuan Jualan. Had we been guiding Yiv's efforts instead of merely watching them, he would have been far more successful.
Of course,
Kilori said, ducking his head.
I apologize for any offense.
None is taken. At any rate, the frontal attack has failed, as many of us predicted it would. Clearly something more subtle will be necessary.
Kilori pricked up his ears.
You're going against the Chiss?
Do you disapprove?
Not at all,
Kilori assured him.
They've taken my life from me. If your offer of a bright future includes revenge on the Chiss, you can count me in.
Excellent.
Abruptly, the displays and controls came back to life. Kilori took a deep breath. Watching as the self-checks cleared, watching as the location display calibrated itself. His earlier assessment had been correct. They were very much in the middle of nowhere.
You may continue our journey,
the voice continued.
We will talk again later.
Yes,
Kilori said.
May I, if I can't have your name... Can you at least tell me what to call you?
Jixtus,
the voice said.
You may call me Jixtus. Make good note of that name, Kilori of Yuan-Yuan. It's the name of he who will finally and completely destroy the Chiss ascendancy.
This is Mark Thompson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars, Thrawn Ascendancy, Chaos Rising by Timothy Zahn. This program was produced and directed by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Nick Martorelli. Star Wars, Thrawn Ascendancy, Chaos Rising is a production of Lucasfilm Limited and registered or trademarked where indicated. Copyright 2020. all rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production Copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Penguin Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.